Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, live from Denver, Colorado, in the Democratic National Convention. It is opening night for the Democrats at the Pepsi Center Arena on the edge of downtown Denver. The Rockies are high and gorgeous on the horizon. Hopes and tensions and critical issues for the country are all surging right here. So is enthusiasm. Earlier today, we caught up with Superdelegate Helen Langan from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Oh my gosh, it's really exciting. We just stepped into the convention center a minute ago, and the setup is phenomenal. And we were really happy that our state, little old Utah, one of the most conservative states in the country, had a fabulous spot.
And these delegates are ready to get down to business. Here's 19-year-old delegate Brett Carmichael from Brookfield, Missouri. He's worried about health care.
In 4 years, I'm going to be going out on my own, making a living. And looking at the current costs, I don't see how I would be able to get a first job out of college and be able to afford it.
Healthcare is just one of the big issues where Americans are looking for relief. There is a very long list. Earlier today in Davenport, Iowa, Barack Obama said the country needs a new approach.
Are we going to do the same things that got us into this mess in the first place, or are we going to try something different? And I think it is time for us to try something new. That's what I believe.
Tonight, it is big theater in Denver's enormous Pepsi Center, where the Jumbotron panels are ablaze with light over my shoulder, and Michelle Obama will step to the podium later this evening. There's a tribute to ailing Senator Ted Kennedy coming, too, and Jimmy Carter, Jesse Jackson Jr., and much more. And beneath it all, a fight to change the direction of this country on a host of fronts. This hour, On Point, live from Denver in the Democratic National Convention, we're getting down to business with the Democrats. You can join the conversation on the issues that matter to you. What do you hope for, long for, fear from the Democrats? What's the change you see in Barack Obama? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. A special welcome tonight to listeners joining us live from Maine, Miami, Pittsburgh, Washington, D.C., and New York. Joining me now at our broadcast booth in the Pepsi Center in Denver is Ron Brownstein, political director for Atlantic Media, publishers of The Atlantic, The National Journal, and The Hotline. Ron, great to have you. Thanks for being here. Also with us is Gerald Seib, assistant managing editor at The Wall Street Journal. He writes the Capital Journal column. He's co-author of Pennsylvania Avenue Profiles in Backroom Power. Jerry Seib, great to have you
here. Thank you.
And we're joined from Denver by Bert Johnson, state representative from Michigan's 5th District, which includes Northeast Detroit. He has been an Obama supporter from the very beginning. He joins us in Denver. Bert Johnson, thank you very much for joining us, sir.
How are you, Tom? Thanks for having me.
I hear your plane was a little late today, but we've got you on the phone in Denver, and we're very happy to have you. Ron Brownstein, first to you. We are going to hear a lot about Barack Obama's history, his personal history, his character, his personality this week. But behind it all, Americans are deciding on what kind of priorities they're going to have in the years ahead. How do you see the choice here? If people are sitting back, maybe for the first time with this convention, looking at Barack Obama and John McCain, big terms, how do you see the choice?
Well, the fundamental tug-of-war in this election, I believe, between John McCain and Barack Obama is what the election is going to be about, how people are going to make their decision. It's pretty clear from this summer what John McCain wants the election to be about. He wants it to be a referendum on whether Barack Obama is ready to be president. And you saw all the advertising this summer basically arguing at different points that he's inexperienced, lacks qualifications, he's an empty suit, he's a vapid celebrity. Obama this week partially has to respond to that, and we're going to see Michelle Obama and others testifying to his background, his experiences, the defensive part of the convention. But the bigger challenge, really, is to move toward what Obama wants the election to be about. He wants the election to be a referendum on whether to continue in the direction set by George W. Bush, particularly on the economy, the bite you played just now. Are we going to do the same things that got us into this mess in the first place? That really is, the defensive part of this is important, which is the defensive part is explaining who Obama is in a way that allows him to connect with a broader range of voters. But ultimately, more important, really, to the success of this week is shifting the overall frame through which people are viewing this election.
Americans say again and again they want to vote on the issues. When it comes down to it, there's a lot of gut involved, too. But Barack Obama has been promising a lot. Let's listen back to January, his big breakthrough in Iowa. In his victory speech after winning the Iowa Democratic caucuses on January 3rd, Obama described the agenda he would seek to carry out as president.
I'll be a president who finally makes health care affordable and available to every single American the same way I expanded health care in Illinois. By bringing Democrats and Republicans together to get the job done. I'll be a president who ends the tax breaks for companies that ship our jobs overseas and put a middle-class tax cut into the pockets of working Americans who deserve it.
Jerry Seib with the Wall Street Journal. There's a lot of water under the bridge since Iowa, but promises get made all along the way and they mount up. Now here we are in the Pepsi Center here in Denver. It's the Democratic National Convention. People surging through the halls all around us. Michelle coming, Obama coming on later tonight. How do you see the most important promises that have been made by Barack Obama for this country in terms of the direction it would take, you know, starting January next year if he should be elected president?
Well, first of all, the two most important words in that Obama clip that you just played are middle class. If Democrats, a lot of smart Democrats think those are the two words that Americans ought to hear over and over and over again this week. Because as Ron suggested, the most important Obama promises in the eyes of many in his party here are the economic ones. The goal, I think, is to neutralize the national security argument, to make Barack Obama seem safe as a commander-in-chief, and Joe Biden, by the way, is there to help do that, and then move on to what is perceived by a lot of Democrats as deep middle-class economic anxiety. I can't afford health care anymore. I don't know if my job is safe. I don't understand whether economic globalization is good for me or bad for me. And the Obama promises, Tom, on that front have to do with a middle-class tax cut, universal health care, which he had to sort of get dragged to promising by Hillary Clinton, and a redirection of some funds into things like real alternative energy programs that might produce some green jobs. Things like that matter a lot to a lot of middle-class Democrats, and that's the audience this week.
You're with the Wall Street Journal. The economy is at the heart of a lot of this. Describe for us the tax cuts for the middle class, the other things Obama's proposing. What's the balance, or is it a give and take between what he can give in terms of tax cuts and the economy people are going to be facing when they look for a job, when they look for a paycheck?
It is. And the balancing act for Barack Obama is to promise to roll back some but not all of the Bush tax cuts. There are a lot of Democrats who think the formula might easily just be just roll back all the Bush tax cuts. That's not Barack Obama's formula. His formula is save the tax cuts that help the middle class, roll back some of the others, add some corporate taxes, raise the capital gains tax, raise the tax on dividends, but promise a tax cut along the way and make sure that rings in the ears of middle-income Americans.
Ron Brownstein, if you're in the middle class and you are comfortable with Barack Obama on national security, not everyone is, but if you're there and you are, is there any reason not to think that his economic plan is crafted for you, middle class, or woman?
It is a very aggressive tax plan in two respects. First, as Jerry says, it raises taxes substantially on people over $250,000 a year. But he also puts a lot of money into cutting taxes for people at the median income. And, you know, that latter decision, his argument that we need to cut taxes in the middle because of widening inequality in the last decade or so, becomes a little bit more debatable when you're essentially borrowing the money from your children to pay for that tax cut. I mean, he's talking about big tax cuts at a time that we have a projected deficit in the next year of almost $500 billion, and is also, as Jerry said, talking about substantial increases in a variety of areas, healthcare, alternative energy, infrastructure, education, big increases in spending. You do have to wonder if he does get elected, can he hold the Democratic Congress around that platform, which is very substantial tax increases on the top, tax cuts in the middle, and substantial new spending without real attention to the deficit. A very different calculation than Bill Clinton made, for example, in 1993, and one that may prove tougher in governing than it will as sort of a campaign message.
I want to talk about that difference. Barack Obama talking about how he might pay for things today, at least his version. Here he is during a whistle-stop rally in Davenport, Iowa, today, on his way to Denver. Obama promising to devote billions to create new jobs by rebuilding American highways, adding high-speed rail, increasing renewable energy sources, and here's where he plans to find at least some of the cash to do it.
If we are spending $10 billion a month in Iraq, we can spend $10 billion a month right here in the United States of America, rebuilding our infrastructure and putting our economy back on track.
Jerry Seib with the Wall Street Journal. How about that Obama math?
Well, it's a start toward the math that Ron's talking about, but it's not the finish. There's the rubber really meets the road here on health care. I mean, there are a lot of people in this party who want a very aggressive, universal. Some people would like to get on the road toward a national government-sponsored health program. That's where a Barack Obama can't go, because that's where that $10 billion he's talking about adds up to trillions of dollars eventually. And so he's got to restrain some of the wishes of the party while he pushes his economic formula. And that's a hard thing to do.
When you say he's been dragged toward universal health care then by Hillary Clinton, but not toward that sort of let the government do it, where have they landed? The platform being approved today here in Denver, where have they finally come down?
Well, they finally come down in a middle ground, really, that promises universal coverage, that the party will find a way to make coverage available to all Americans. That's partly through the employer program, partly through government subsidies to people who can't afford their own, and partly through expanded programs like the Children's Health Program to cover more Americans. It's a little from column A, column B, and column C that gets the Democrats there, but not in the big, massive program that some in the liberal wing of the party would like.
Bert Johnson of Michigan, you're listening patiently there on the phone in Denver. Do you hear your candidate Obama standing up for the middle class in these plans?
Oh, absolutely. And I think what's particularly important in the whole middle class conversation is to remember that we've watched more middle class Americans sort of be ushered out of that class over the last 8 years than we ever have in history. And it's about time that someone come along and look at what it would take to put those people back at the top of the food chain and to bring people out of the poverty that they've sunk so low in over the last 8 years. This is really a campaign about giving honest, hardworking Americans an opportunity to thrive again and to put their kids through college and to have affordable health care and to give them the opportunity to pay real decent rates on mortgages and afford car notes and things of that nature. And this is just an exciting time. And so I'm happy to see that all of these issues are being debated. And I think that they've come to the forefront in such a prolific manner in part.
They're right on the platform here tonight. Bert Johnson, please stand by in Denver. Ron Brownstein with me from the Atlantic Media. Jerry Seib from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point live from Denver. Join us 800-423-8255. This is On Point. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Denver, and it is opening night at the Democratic National Convention. We're getting down to business with the Democrats to look at their platform and their plans to win back the White House. Behind me there, the Colorado Children's Chorale, rehearsing earlier today in the big convention hall. It is a buzz right now. People looking ahead to focus tonight on Michelle Obama and the ailing Senator Ted Kennedy, who will have a tribute for him in the convention hall tonight. He is in Denver. You can join the conversation. We're at 1-800-423-8255. What do you want to see and hear from the Democrats this week? What are the issues that you most want to see pushed into the spotlight? Where do you see the most daylight between Barack Obama and John McCain on which issues? And what's most important this week, Barack Obama's personal story or his positions on the issues, on the economy, war, health care, the environment, energy? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined by a Democratic delegate, Bert Johnson, from just north of Detroit, Democratic State Representative from Michigan's 5th District in town today, late on the plane, but with us by phone. With me in our broadcasting booth here, squeezed in behind CNN and what do we have here? CBS and Fox News, above the big cavernous convention hall at the Pepsi Center, Ron Brownstein of Atlantic Media, author of The Second Civil War, and Jerry Seib of The Wall Street Journal, co-author of with John Harwood of Pennsylvania Avenue, Profiles in Backroom Power. Ron Brownstein, you said earlier that Barack Obama's got a different approach on the economy than Bill Clinton had in the 1990s. Describe that difference for
us. Well, there are a variety of areas where Obama is making both a different substantive and a different political calculation. Bill Clinton, when he came into office, also had very ambitious plans for expanding public investment and public spending, but ultimately felt the need to constrain those, reduce them, scale them back, to focus more on deficit reduction. Obama is not making any specific promise on deficit reduction other than to not increase the deficit, a kind of do no harm. And they are saying explicitly that they will put a higher priority on increasing public spending in areas like energy, healthcare, and education than on reducing the deficit. Second, in a major speech earlier this year, he explicitly criticized some of the financial and other economic deregulation measures that Clinton signed, telecommunications, the repeal of the Glass-Steagall law that separated banking and finance. And third, of course, the other big difference on the economic front is trade, where he has moved toward a much more skeptical position on free trade than Clinton did. Tom, all of these reflect changes that have happened in the Democratic Party over the last 8 years. The entire party has moved in this direction. And there is an underlying political bet here. I mean, Clinton believed that the core Democratic mission of using government to expand opportunity had to be safeguarded with kind of armor plating of support of a balanced budget, demand for personal responsibility, calls for government reform. Obama is betting that you can sell more government with less of these defenses than Clinton thought necessary. Someone said to me the other day for a story I wrote, Obama is betting that the era of big government being over is over.
Let's go to our listeners. Many want in this conversation here in Denver at the DNC. Dave is calling from Middletown, Connecticut. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
We're very well. What do you see, Dave?
Well, you know, what I see is we went to sleep dreaming the American dream, and we woke up with the American nightmare. I'm 54 years old. Had a middle-class life. Don't anymore. My mother had a middle-class life. Doesn't anymore. My father had a middle-class life. They're divorced. Doesn't anymore. We really have come to a point with every issue, the economy, energy, the environment, the spending we're making on war, healthcare, all of these things have come to such a critical mass that really what we need from the Democratic Party right now is, I hate to say it, salvation. We need someone that can wake the country up and restore this American dream, which is really no longer, I think, even the dream in many people's eyes. They just want to be able to get by. And Obama, in order to do it, I really think needs to have the faith that we really are, as a people, as a country, so many of us, at that precipice, that we would respond to his pure message. We really need his pure message and his faith in what would happen, America responding to that pure message. And I think that if they don't do that, if they don't move forward in that way, if they water it down, if they're afraid to come forward because of how they'll be attacked by the Republicans, that they will fail.
And Dave, we've got it, and it sounds almost like a prayer there coming in from you. Jerry Seib, you're listening, you hear it. I'm sure it's not the first time you've heard this kind of description of how people are experiencing the economy today. What do you say?
Well, I think that it speaks to what is, I think, different about the economy now versus 8, 10, 15, 16 years ago, which is underlying insecurities. Not, I don't think I'm doing well today, but I don't know whether we can survive in a global economy. I don't know whether technology has overtaken my career, my job, my future. Those are very deep-seated worries, and those are the things that politicians, smart politicians, know they have to start addressing. It's more than, what am I going to do for you today? What's my stimulus program for next year? It's like, what are the changes in the economy that we all have to come to terms with?
Speak to us then about how Obama's approach would work, because Americans have become sophisticated.
Yeah.
At least they've had a lot of different messages put in front of them in the last couple of decades. Ronald Reagan said, let's put money in the hands of people who will invest it. George W. Bush said the same thing. Tax cuts went heavily to the top. He said, well, that's going to mean capital accumulation. That'll be invested. We'll have new business. The economy will thrive. On the other hand, you're saying Barack Obama wants to put more cash in middle-class pockets.
Yeah.
What's the economic analysis you're hearing there? I know there's more than one here.
I think the best word to describe the Obama approach is partnership. I mean, he sort of views the government in partnership with the middle class to work through some of these problems. And that doesn't mean a social program to solve them all, and it doesn't mean you're totally against all trade deals. It means you find some middle ground. The tricky part for the Obama team, I think, should they win, is that to do some of the things that Ron is describing require lots of Democratic support. But Barack Obama talks about a new way. Let's come together in the middle. Let's find people from both parties so we have a national consensus. That's going to require, obviously, compromising and moving toward the middle. And that has the seeds for tension from some of the Democrats here versus a Barack Obama administration.
Barack Obama going hard today after John McCain. The Republicans have had some tough ads on the air and around the media kind of sphere. The Obama campaign releasing an ad today deriding John McCain's knowledge of the economy. It mocks McCain headline quotes over Sam Cooke's classic song, A Wonderful World.
I'm not up on the economy, don't know much about industry.
Picture it on TV, and while it rolls, the headlines are there. From John McCain, December 2007, economics is not something I've understood as well as I should. And then a big picture of John McCain and George Bush
hugging, the language comes up, voted with Bush 90% of the time. Let's just listen.
Four more years of the same old tune?
Do you really want four more years of the same old tune? Ron Brownstein, how about it? When Barack Obama and John McCain go head-to-head on the economy, which is front and center for a lot of Americans, what does it look like?
Well, that is the core message, as I said, of this convention. I mean, I think the fundamental task this week is to have that question be foremost in voters' minds as you move into the final 2 months of the election, not the question of whether it is an up or down referendum on Barack Obama's fitness to be president. Look, Obama does not have a crystal clear, concise economic message yet that explains what has gone wrong and how government can help lift the middle class out. He has a lot of programs. Today, Stan Greenberg released a study, a Democratic pollster in Macomb County, right near
in
where
Michigan.
Bert Johnson
yes,
is,
indeed.
Of blue-collar voters who defected from the Democratic Party over these last two decades and were still trying to figure out what Obama meant to them, how he would help them. I think that is part of the challenge here this week. The message in the primaries was primarily a broad reform change message that has a lot of appeal upscale, and he was a very strong candidate among college-educated white voters. It's a little amorphous for folks who are worrying about paying for the kids' sneakers, and ultimately, those voters, those non-college white voters, voted 2-1 for Hillary Clinton in the primaries. He's still polling, struggling with them in the polls, 38% or less, usually in the pre-convention polling. He's got to figure out a way to talk to those voters around the kitchen table, because he's not going to win them on national security. He's not going to win them on cultural connection. If he is going to win them, it is by speaking to their economic anxiety.
Bert Johnson, you're there in Michigan. You're right in the heartland of what was America's industrial belt. Still is in many ways, but it has been hurting. What about it? You're a Democratic delegate. You know exactly what Ron Brownstein is talking about. A lot of Democrats went for Hillary Clinton. A lot of white, blue-collar Democrats have voted Republican again and again in presidential elections in recent decades. How do you see it unfolding for Barack Obama in the next, it's just 10 weeks now or so until the election?
Yeah, not a long time. But what I expect to hear from the senator tonight, but over the course of this convention is I want to hear him talk about who he is. I want him to introduce himself to the rest of this country for people who haven't been able to see him on the grand stage, but who have had snippets of who he is, but also to begin to really introduce that sound economic plan so that people can actually sink their teeth into what it is that he's talking about, because it's such a connectivity issue. And aside from that, I think the senator has got to not necessarily explain away his weaknesses, but I think he's got to show the true muster of his team now with him and Senator Biden, and I think he's going to do that, and I think he's going to do it eloquently.
Is telling his personal story enough to bring over that blue-collar worker in Michigan who was for Hillary Clinton, or who may have been for Ronald Reagan, may have been for George W. Bush? Does Barack Obama's personal story bring them over, or is it the message, I'm there for you, Mr. and Mrs. Middle Class?
It's more the message of we're in the same boat together, that we exist here together and that we can think through this together, and that on the back end we will rise again as a country that can benefit all of its citizens. It's not just the story that he tells, although it's unique, and many people will empathize with it, and they will know it, and they will have lived it. But it is more about what he can do for them, and how they're going to be able to benefit by Barack Obama and Joe Biden presidency.
Let's take a call from New York City, Harlem. Richard, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, y'all. I wanted to focus. I think it's great, and I certainly agree that the economy is an important focus. But I think they're also forgetting the education or the lack thereof education in the country. That is something that the Democrats need to focus on, because in my opinion, the baby boomers have grandkids that are in college and cannot afford to go to college. So a lot of these middle-income class workers also are struggling to send their kids to college. So we need to focus on improving quality of education. And in terms of what Obama needs to sell, I think for starters, I think everyone already knows who he is. We've seen who he is, and that really hasn't, increased his polling numbers. I think he really needs to look people in the eye and acknowledge that, he maybe even apologize about what transpired between himself and Hillary, and say, let's put this behind us for the greater good of the country.
And get the children educated. Bert Johnson, I hear you there.
Tom, I think the caller's right on, particularly for the larger urban arenas across the country. The senator has to articulate a new plan to educate children and allow them to then take part in this global economic boom that we've seen that the country has just been slow to get behind or be able to take part in. If he can do that, he's going to bring on so many working class people whose children have really just been left out of the mix as it relates to the failed George Bush No Child Left Behind mandate. It's an unfunded mandate here in the city of Detroit. And so if he can do that and do it in a very real and commonsensical way, it's going to mean something to working men and women.
Gerald Seib, Democrats have often been seen as prisoners of teachers' unions and of entrenched ways of educating American children. There have been some radical ideas out there. George Bush had his own with testing and No Child Left Behind. What does Barack Obama offer on this front?
Well,
is he concrete?
It not very. It's not been a subject that's been discussed a lot. And one of the problems, and this goes back to a point Ron made, is that at some point all the ideas that Democrats like to talk about with regard to education have big dollar signs attached to them. The Democrats have decided that No Child Left Behind did not work for them and their party quite the way they had hoped. Ted Kennedy, who's going to be here tonight, mm-hmm. was helped make it happen.
Yep.
There's clearly buyer's remorse on that. I think the party's not prepared to move away from testing and move away from standards, but I don't think it likes the No Child Left Behind formula. If there's a Democratic victory, I think you'll see the beginnings of a journey to try to find a new approach that's not really defined yet.
Ron?
Quick. The one exception to that in the Democratic Party, the superintendents of big city school districts, who by and large feel that the testing and the labeling of schools and whether they're making adequate yearly progress has given them leverage to try to force change in systems that are difficult to change. Barack Obama started off bolder on education than he is today. He talked initially about merit pay for teachers. He's really muted and diluted that as the campaign has gone on. He has been critical, as Jerry said, of No Child Left Behind without really giving us exactly how he might change the testing regime. His focus, like many Democrats, is incentives to bring people into the teaching profession and keep them there. But without standards, I think you would find a lot of those big city school superintendents saying it's very tough to get change in the system, and No Child Left Behind actually has been an asset for them in that.
Let's take a call from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Is it Bo here? No, Dave. Dave, I'm sorry. Dave, you're on the air.
Hello. One of my issues has been, all back in the spring, there was a questionnaire of Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and John McCain regarding what their priorities would be in the first 100 days that they would possibly be in office.
Yes.
And there was a unison on the behalf of both Democratic candidates at that time regarding to get together with the National Science Foundation and the leading scientists in this country and get them together about what could be done in an immediate sense to jumpstart a resurgence in government policy that was based on sound science instead of some of the policy that we've had of the last 8 years. And, of course, John McCain had nothing of that nature featured in his first 100 days. And I see it now, granted it's Barack Obama that is the candidate, and that's fantastic with me, but both Democratic candidates had this as an important element of their first 100 days.
Dave in Fort Lauderdale, we've got it. Our time is short before the break, but let us pick it up, Jerry Seib. You can hear in our callers. I mean, Americans, you can hear, they're serious about getting down to the business of being competitive, not just waiting for something to happen. Questions on education. Question here from Dave on science. What do you know about Barack Obama and science and what he would push there?
I think that question is really about global warming as much as it is about science. And
well, it's about competitiveness.
Right. But making sure the government is not injecting its policies is rejecting them with science, not with politics. That's the complaint here about global warming among a lot of Democrats, that the government hasn't gotten serious about addressing the global warming problem because it's still arguing the science of the global warming problem. Maybe we're beyond all that. But there is a need for an advance in the U.S. economy on environmental sciences and on competitiveness. And so I think the caller is touching on something that I do think is an area where Democrats can make some ground in this campaign if they're talking directly to how that translates to people, not in a conceptual way.
Jerry Seib, we've just got you for half a minute more here at the Pepsi Center and the Democrats' convention. How about the big issue we've talked about with you is the economy and Obama's message. Do you see it
as a bulldozer toward that election day in November. Does it work for him, or is it at odds with what Americans have heard from Ronald Reagan? And
it better work for him, because that's what this election is going to be about from the Democrats' point of view. If it doesn't work for him, then he's got a big problem. But I think the anxieties are real. I think the ground is fertile for a discussion about this particular element of the economic problem, which is middle-class anxieties that are deep and long-term, not short-term and not tactical. And, yeah, it better work for him, because that's the ticket.
Gerald Seib with The Wall Street Journal, great to have you with us.
Thanks.
And Representative Burt Johnson, Democrat delegate from Michigan. So good to have you with us, Burt Johnson. Thank you for joining us in Denver.
Thank you, Tom.
Ron Brownstein, please stand by with me here in the Convention Center. There's much more to come. Listeners, you can join us. What do the Democrats need to do right out of the gate here in Denver to make their case for the White House? We're at 800-423-8255. Live from Denver, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from Denver, and it is opening night here at the Democratic National Convention. The hallways are just surging with delegates coming in for their first big night. Michelle Obama will speak tonight. Jimmy Carter will speak tonight. The delegates here will see a tribute to Senator Ted Kennedy, who is in Denver despite his treatment for brain cancer going on right now. You can join the conversation tonight. We are getting down to business with the Democrats, looking at their plans and their platform, their plans to win back the White House. If they can, what do you think? What do they need to do right out of the gate in Denver to make their case? Do they need to push hardest on issues, on unity, on John McCain? And what do you want to hear from Michelle Obama tonight? Democrats, what do you most want from your party now? Republicans, what do you think of the plans being laid out? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I've been joined by Ron Brownstein, political director for Atlantic Media Publishers of The Atlantic, The National Journal, and The Hotline. Join us, 800-423-8255. Ron, we were just talking during the break about some of these hot-button issues in the platform. Gods, guns, and gays is the way it used to be put. That whole arena, not as hot in this campaign season so far as Americans have become accustomed to seeing it in years past, but of course it's there on abortion, on gun control. All that is in play. Barack Obama trying to sort of walk a middle line here?
Well, you know, the funny thing about cultural issues is that whether or not the candidates talk about them, the country still divides around those lines. I mean, in the modern political era, Tom, culture, more than class, is the glue that holds these coalitions together. And to mix the metaphor, it's really the engine in the, you know, the fuel in the engine for each party. Obama, by and large, is to the left of where Bill Clinton, the last Democratic president, positioned the party on cultural issues. He would, for example, repeal the Defense of Marriage Act that Bill Clinton signed that said any state, explicitly said any state was authorized not to recognize a gay marriage performed in another state. Obama says that's not necessary. The Constitution already allows them that authority. He's skeptical of some of the tough-on-crime measures that Bill Clinton did, mandatory minimum sentences, especially for nonviolent drug offenders. But he does, as you say, try to walk a line. He doesn't talk about gun control. Like Clinton, he supports extending the assault weapon ban. You never hear that from him. You don't really hear that from any Democrat anymore. And he also, like Bill Clinton very much, talks about personal responsibility in the African-American community. He's ruffled some feathers with people like Jesse Jackson by talking about the responsibilities of African-American men to the children they father. So he does try to present a centrist, somewhat centrist image. But having said that, if you look at the patterns of support in this election, there is a very clear cultural divide. Obama is much better with better educated, somewhat more affluent white voters who tend to be more culturally liberal. He's struggling with rural voters and with blue-collar white voters who tend to be more conservative on cultural and national security issues. And, of course, that's the tension. More populist on economic issues, but more conservatives on those cultural and foreign policy issues, and that's what pulls them in two directions at once.
Ron, what about the tension? And I guess you begin to hit on it right there between the Clinton and Obama camps. Hillary Clinton did better with some of that blue-collar vote. Barack Obama, at the same time, when it comes to religious issues, very comfortable talking in the faith realm. Did it with Pastor Rick Warren at Saddleback Church, as John McCain did not long ago. How do you see that? I mean, even here today, we're seeing little headlines busting out all over about tension remaining between the Clinton and Obama camps. Can that be sewn up in a way that helps him reach out to a middle ground that may be
tough for him?
You know, there is tension at the elite level, the people running the campaigns. I mean, they've ran against each other as long as anybody has done, and I don't think they like each other very much at the end, and both sides are kind of struggling to make this work. It's important to make it work. You look, four different polls in the last week have shown Obama running at 70% or less among people who said they supported Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary. That makes this election a lot tighter than it would be if he could move that number up. Another number worth considering, half a dozen of the pre-convention national polls that have come out in the last few days, Obama is only running about 80% of Democrats. And that's largely because of the Hillary supporters. McCain is in the mid-80s among Republicans. John Kerry got to 89% in 2004. So in some ways, the first task here is to unify the party. The one question I have is how much can Hillary Clinton help him do that? Certainly, she can. Her speech is important, the kind of body language she sends out. But ultimately, Obama has to connect directly to those voters, especially those non-college, somewhat older white Democrats in many cases, who preferred her and still don't relate to him culturally. He has to find a way to connect to those Democrats. And as Jerry was saying before, the economy certainly is his best route to do that, his best chance to bring those people in.
He has to win it. He has to reach out and grab it. Let's take a call from Sarasota, Florida. And Chris. Chris in Sarasota, you're on the air.
Hi. You know,
Hi, Chris.
Calling because I'm staggered and amazed by the fact that there are people who could support Hillary Clinton during the primaries and then switch their allegiance or even waver to John McCain. It just seems like a case of cutting off one's nose despite their faith. I don't get it. I don't understand how they can vote against their self-interest in that way, particularly when it comes to matters like, you know, appointments on the Supreme Court.
It looks like it could be a stretch. At the same time, there are some, and now famously, because in Republican ads as of, I think, today, there's at least one former Hillary supporter who's now going for John McCain. What about that stretch, Ron Brownstein? If you stood in the Democratic camp, and now there's Barack Obama as the torchbearer, will be formally made so this week. Can you, you know, how big a stretch is it to get over to John McCain?
Look at the substance. The caller is exactly right. I mean, there is a big space between Hillary Clinton and John McCain on a lot of issues, but if you look at who is defecting, they tend to be non-college, more culturally and foreign policy conservative, older voters who just don't relate to Obama. Now, not that many of them right now are saying they're going to vote for McCain, although it depends on the poll. A lot of them are saying they're undecided or perhaps not going to vote. I mean, it's indicative of the larger problem that Obama has. As we've said a couple times in this hour, he is very strong among upscale white voters, better educated white voters. And you know, he will probably do very well in Bergen County, New Jersey, and Oakland County, Michigan, and in upscale parts of Arapahoe, just south of here. His challenge, really, to build a majority coalition is to perform reasonably well among those downscale white voters. He doesn't have to win them. Tom, I mean, Democrats don't win those voters. They don't have to win a majority of them to win, but he can't get annihilated among them. John Kerry only got 38%, according to the exit poll, of white voters without a college education. Obama has to do a little better if he's going to win in November. I mean, the Hillary is part of a larger problem. It's a subset of a broader problem with a specific group of voters.
Let's take a call from Andover, Massachusetts, and Eleanor. Eleanor, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to see Barack Obama tie in the war to the economy. It really is an economic issue, and the money that we're bleeding over there is causing us. The federal government can't pay the states can't pay the municipalities, and so everything's suffering. And I think that's an issue that goes across class and across economic lines and everything.
Eleanor, let us pick it up in Denver. We heard the tape earlier, Ron Brownstein, from Obama saying he'd take that $10 billion a month and turn it from Iraq back home. We heard Jerry Seib say, well, that's nice, but it won't pay for everything. And yet, what about the, is there a seesaw here? If you're paying one, you can't pay for both.
Well,
can't pay for everything.
I think Eleanor is going to be happy with what she hears the rest of the way, because as conditions on the ground have improved in Iraq, Democrats have concluded that the economic argument, the cost argument, is probably their best case in the debate about the war. And certainly we've seen Obama and other Democratic candidates around the country shift more toward that terrain as violence has subsided in Iraq itself.
Let's get a call from Boca Raton, Florida. Bonnie, you're on the air right out to Denver. What's on your mind?
Well, I think that Barack Obama and Joe Biden are fantastic, and I'm 100% for them. I have one suggestion for the Democratic National Convention. I believe that they should have somebody from Barack Obama's mother's side of the family speak at the convention.
Now, that is interesting. You mean the Kansas side of the Kenya-Kansas duo, Bonnie. Why do you wish
That's correct.
And by that, let's cut right to it. You mean somebody who's from Kansas and who's white?
That's correct.
And why do you think that would be a good idea exactly?
Just listen to C-SPAN and you'll hear all the bigoted people that call in. And if they realize that he's white as well, they may have a different opinion of him.
Ron Brownstein and Bonnie, thanks for your call. We're going to hear tonight from one of Barack's half-sisters. We're going to hear from a brother of Michelle Obama. But I haven't seen
I
the...
I have not, but I would not be surprised. I mean, certainly, in a broader sense, one of the big goals in this convention is to ground him in the American experience. It's much like what they tried to do with Bill Clinton in 1992 at the convention. They went into the convention, their polling and focus group showed that many people thought he was a child of privilege, and they wanted to show that he was not only a champion of, but a product of the middle class. And I think that's very much on the mind of the Obama camp as they go through this week as well, to ground his story in a middle class sort of aspirational story, and to have then his agenda organically flow from that. That's what really allowed Clinton to get the kind of takeoff that he did at the 92 convention.
We're going to hear in just a couple of minutes from Chicago a voice and an old friend there who's following Michelle Obama and looking forward to her speech tonight. But sitting down with me right now, we're in Denver at the Democratic National Convention, and all kinds of politicals are floating around here. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon. Is with us here. Senator Wyden, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me again.
It's really great to have you. Let me ask you about a key point. Barack Obama says again and again, I'm going to build bridges. I'm going to work between the parties. I'm going to pull them both in here and do something. Can he really do that? What's the evidence? We've seen a divided country for a long time.
Well, I'm telling you, when he got together with Tom Coburn and they put together that transparency package, I can tell you a lot of United States senators haven't been able to build that bridge.
How about you? You've sponsored major bipartisan health care legislation with, I think, Senator Bob Bennett from Utah. Well, okay, there's maybe an example. Is it a model? How's it going?
Well, first of all, we have the first bipartisan universal coverage health bill in the history of the United States Senate.
And you've got a Democrat and a Republican putting it up there.
16 senators, 8 Democrats, 8 Republicans. And I can tell you, for example, that a lot of what we have in our legislation mirrors what Senator Obama has been talking about. For example, we all understand that the insurance model is broken. It is a dysfunctional marketplace. Essentially, they make their money by cherry picking. They go out and take healthy people and send sick people over to government programs more fragile than they are. Senator Obama has the kind of insurance reforms that we've got 16 United States senators behind.
So is that evidence that, hey, all you have to do is put Obama in the White House and Republicans and Democrats are going to, you know, sing around the maypole together?
Look, nobody thinks this is going to be easy. There's been a reason that after 60 years we haven't been able to fix health care. But I can tell you that we have made tremendous progress in the last few years. And I'll just cite one example, Bill. I think it plays to the strength of a consensus builder. For example, many of the Republicans in 1993 who resisted the idea of covering everybody because they saw it as socialized medicine have now changed. And I think it's part of the economic imperative. There are a lot of Republicans who understand that unless you cover everybody, the people who are uninsured shift their bills to the insured. So we have Senator Chuck Grassley, for example, the senior Republican on the Finance Committee, Bob Bennett, who is McConnell's chief lieutenant, Judd Gregg, a senior member of the Budget Committee. All of them are prepared to work, in my view, with a Democratic president to finally break the paralysis we've seen on this issue.
Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon, we're so glad we snagged you as you came by. Thank you very much for joining us.
Let's do it again soon. You're running with the right crowd with Brownstein.
It's great to have you.
Thanks.
Ron, what do you think here of the example of Senator Wyden of Oregon?
Look, the one of the fundamental questions about a Barack Obama presidency would be, how do the words and music fit together? The agenda that he's put out, by and large, tilts left, and that's the words. But the lyric, the music of the campaign is transcending difference, transcending ideological and partisan difference. How will he balance the demands of his base against his overriding desire to break some of this partisan polarization? That really will be a critical question if he's elected.
We've got to turn right now to the issue of Michelle Obama. She's going to be at the podium tonight. Let's listen to just a little bit of Michelle Obama talking with CNN this morning about her middle-class roots.
My father was a shift worker. He worked for the city all his life, same job. And as I've told people know my father had multiple sclerosis. My father had a severe disability. You know, no silver spoons, no magic, just parents who tried their best to give the next generation something a little bit more.
Michelle Obama this morning on CNN. I saw her this afternoon in the big hall here. She was at the podium kind of rehearsing with her two daughters at her side. Joining us right now from Chicago, from Denver, is Laura Washington with the Chicago Sun-Times. She knows Michelle Obama and her history well. Laura, thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Tom. Glad to be in Denver. Welcome.
it's great to have you. What do you see as Michelle Obama's goal and maybe her challenge tonight here?
Well, I was thinking about this earlier today, and I think she needs to sort of like be chicken noodle soup. She's got to be comforting. She's got to be familiar. She's got to be warm and fuzzy. Barack Obama's critics have tried to paint her as this really hardcore, angry black woman. Some of them call her the First Lady of Grievance. Yes, she is a frank and honest person. Maybe sometimes she's been a little bit too honest. Tonight, you're not going to see that edge to her. You're going to see her talk about, which you just heard in that clip, talk about her family bio, which is very compelling. Talk about how her and Barack got together. And in many ways, she brought Barack Obama's blackness out. As you point out earlier, he is biracial. And he has even talked about and written about how when she introduced him to her African-American, solidly African-American family, growing up on the south side of Chicago, it helped the blackness in him blossom. So you're going to hear her talk about that. You're going to hear her talk about how, you know, she herself defied the stereotypes. How when she went to Princeton, she was told that she talked white, that she was a puppy, and that she had to prove to them that as an African-American woman, she could achieve, she could be a career woman, but also be a good mother. She's going to talk about her family, her motherhood, and what that means to her.
Laura, do you know how Michelle Obama has taken on board the criticism from the right? You know, emotionally, how has she dealt with that First Lady of Grievance kind of tag that's been put on her?
She's been very, as you can imagine, she doesn't believe that that's who she is. She will admit that she's outspoken, but she believes, in her heart, she believes that she has a lot of passion for this country. So when people call her unpatriotic, as she has been called, what I've heard her say is she's just sort of mystified by the whole thing. But I think she also understands that, you know, she's in a different place now. She's on a different platform, the world stage, and she maybe can't say everything that she's thinking, that she's got to curb her strong views. And in many ways, to sort of step back into the background and not be as strident as maybe she was before she was in the international spotlight.
Chicken noodle soup, Laura Washington is predicting from Michelle Obama tonight. Maybe that's just what the doctor ordered. Laura, we'll talk with you again later in the week. Thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Great to have you. Ron Brownstein, last word on how this convention is getting off. We've got a lot more to come here this week, but what do you see as we sit down here tonight on the first night, opening night, Democratic convention? Prospects for Barack Obama, thumbs up, down, right in the middle, hovering?
You know, he's underperforming his party. In this climate, a lot of Democrats thought this would be a safer race. You have record high level of people saying the country's on the wrong track, a real desire for change. He has an opportunity precisely for that reason. This convention is a chance for him both to rebut some of the arguments, the portrait of him that Republicans have painted this week, but also, even more importantly, to move toward his own argument. If he's playing, if he is responding to the Republican charges, he is ultimately playing defense. He has to move to offense by making the question, do you want to continue in the direction that we are on, particularly on the economy? And that has to be the primary message. And job one, I think, is really unifying the Democratic Party, which comes in, as I said, at a surprising level of a fractionation, only 80% of Democrats saying they're for him.
We're going to know a lot more very soon on that front. This time out, the convention matters. Ron Brownstein, you really are the greatest. Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Being with us tonight. Ron Brownstein, political director for Atlantic Media, publishers of The Atlantic, The National Journal, and Hotline. Live from Denver, and we'll be here all week. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.